Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 29th, and here are some of the stories we have covered. Critics ponder Zimbabwe's future following highly contested election results.
There's a lot of sadness, there's a lot of fear about what the future holds for Zimbabwe. Many people are worried on this electoral outcome.
Zimbabwe's main opposition compiles evidence of irregularities for a possible court challenge. There are some surprising results in Eswatini's parliamentary primary. A diplomatic row between France and Niger's military junta heats up. A judge in Liberia rejects a government motion for change of venue in an alleged murder case. Guinea's prime minister says election to return the country to civilian rule will take place as planned. Africa's health experts gather in Gaborone to discuss pandemic readiness.
This next pandemic, we need to be prepared as other continents are preparing themselves. We need also to see how Africa can become more independent by manufacturing their own vaccine.
And war and hunger spread in Sudan. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe held national election last week in which observers, opposition parties and civil society groups say were marred by irregularities and intimidation of voters, leading to questions about the results. The National Electoral Commission announced over the weekend that incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa, the candidate of the ruling ZANU-PF party, has won his second five-year term. Reporter Kuzai Navashi has more from Harare.
Civic society groups and most opposition political parties are calling the polls a sham. For the first time, voting in Zimbabwe took 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday last week, due to the administrative delays. This has been coupled with allegations of voter intimidation and rigging to favor the ruling ZANU-PF party. Late Saturday night, the Electoral Commission announced the presidential results, saying Mnangagwa won with roughly 54% of the vote. Now critics ponder the impact on a country that has been dealing with a battered economy, lingering international sanctions, and an unhappy population. Vivid Gwede is a political analyst.
People are genuinely depressed by what has just happened, and I think there is a lot of uncertainty about what it means for the future. Also given that Zimbabwe was going to use this election to engage with the international community in terms of re-engagement with the Commonwealth and dealing with this pariah status.
In Harare and most parts of the country, it's quiet. No jubilant celebrations by the winners, just an air of uncertainty. Analyst Rashid Mukundu says the feeling of despair is widespread.
There's a lot of sadness, there's a lot of fear about what the future holds for Zimbabwe. Many people are worried on this electoral outcome, but more so the short manner in which the rigging took place and the attempts to block many people from voting.
Mukundu adds that this will further worsen the economic situation in Zimbabwe.
So essentially we are looking at a deepening of the Zimbabwean social political crisis. We are looking at a continuation of the Zimbabwean crisis with very little hope for the ordinary person who still has to scrape the ground to put food on the table.
The main opposition, Citizens Coalition for Change, says it's preparing an appropriate response, claiming victory was snatched from it, which could lead to further isolation of Zimbabwe. Critics say the opposition's only recourse is to approach the courts, which rejected challenges to the 2018 elections with the same top two presidential candidates. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe in Harare, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, also known as CCC, says it has a three-pronged plan to challenge the outcome of last week's general election. The spokesperson, Promise Nkwananzi, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the party is compiling evidence of irregularities and rigging as proof of fraud.
We have a multi-pronged strategy that we have put in place. We are are going to be considering the legal route, we are going to be considering the diplomatic route, and we are going to be considering the political route. And we are currently submerged in making up our decisions around that. It could be one of them, it could be both, it could be three of them. You know, we are in the process of considering those three options.
But my promise, what are the prospects of success of these three options that you are looking at? Because some of your supporters are even saying that perhaps you should go back to the drawing board and prepare for the next general election.
No, we can't do that. Mnangagwa is the one who must go back to the drawing board and prepare for the next election, because he didn't win this election. And we cannot allow that people steal elections and is brushed under the carpet. That is not the democratic or the political culture that we want to establish in Zimbabwe. We have got to get to the bottom of this and ensure that never again is Zimbabwe subjected to a fraudulent and scandalous election like the one we have seen this time.
You're talking about seeking international support.
We already have the international support. They are not supporting the CCC party. They are supporting the principles for free and fair elections. They are standing on the side of principle. And we welcome the principled stance that the international community has taken. They have not said they support CCC. They have only said their misgivings and disquiet about the standard of the election, that the standard of the election is unable to pass a democratic test.
Promise Nkwanazi is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe's main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. Eswatini's parliamentary primary elections concluded over the weekend with some surprising results. 18 members of parliament and two cabinet ministers lost their seats, including Education Minister Lady Howard Mabuza, according to some analysts. While the results point to a new phenomenon for Eswatini, they say not much has changed because the new MPs are pro-government and have no political affiliation. Government spokesperson Afiolos Zumalo tells me that Eswatini's primary elections do not guarantee second term for incumbents, including the education minister.
Well, I think the irony probably could be that maybe because of his ministerial responsibilities, she might not have had enough time to attend to issues of his constituency. And we have seen this a number of times. Members of parliament who are elected from the communities and are appointed to ministerial responsibilities, due to the intensity at that level of the workload, some are not able to balance the government work together with the work of their constituencies. I'm not necessarily saying this might be the case with her, but I'm saying that that is what we have usually experienced in the past.
But could it also be a reflection on the government, because they serve in the government?
It cannot necessarily be a reflection on the government, because you have a number of cabinet ministers who have made it through to the next round. So you cannot take one or two isolated results and use that as a yardstick to the overall performance of the government.
But we are talking about 18 former MPs who are out. Tell me, how many altogether MPs do you have in your parliament?
We have 67 members of parliament, and so far 18 have bowed out. And of course, we are still expecting more casualties as we move forward to the next level, which is the final level of the election.
Who are the new people that are coming in? Where are they coming from?
They are coming from a very diverse background. We've got journalists, about five journalists that are running here. We've got sports personalities, there are about seven of them. We've got seven doctors, some veterinary doctors, some academic doctors, which are vying for these positions. And of course, we have about three former cabinet ministers who are also performed very well in the primary election.
Can we say that this is a guarantee that those who won the primaries will be elected?
Not at all. I'm saying we are still expecting more casualties and surprises in terms of who will squeeze in to the final stage. There is absolutely no guarantee that those who have made it through the primary elections will eventually make it to the chambers.
As you said, you have journalists coming in, you have even people, sports people. Can we say that the coming parliament is going to be more progressive?
Definitely it will. If they are able to push all the way to the final stage, is going to be a vibrant parliament, in my view, because it is bringing people who are already active in communities and in their societies. They more or less have a clue of what is the needs of their communities and what is the need of the nation at this particular time. So I have got no doubt whatsoever in my mind that we are going to have one of the most active and vibrant members of parliament.
Alfio Zumalo is the Eswatini government spokesperson. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 29th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The UN Humanitarian Office says war and hunger have now spread from Sudan's capital Khartoum and its outskirts to the country's central region. James Shimayula reports from Nairobi.
The spokesman for the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Liak, says food stocks in Sudan's central region of Kordofan have been fully depleted. He says that clashes and roadblocks are preventing aid workers from reaching the hungry.
In Kordofan, humanitarian offices have been ransacked and supplies looted. We are also extremely worried about the safety of civilians in Al Jazeera state as the conflict moves closer to that area, which is the breadbasket of Sudan. Hundreds of thousands of children are already severely malnourished and at imminent risk of death if left untreated. Millions more will have their education replaced by the devastating traumas of war, becoming a lost generation.
Diplomats say as fighting continues on the ground, the Sudan Armed Forces, commanded by Army General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, looks ill-matched against the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, led by his one-time deputy, General Mohamed Hamdani Dagalo. The diplomats describe army soldiers as static and say they depend on artillery and the Air Force to bombard RSF targets before they move in. This forces the paramilitary fighters to take over more houses and offices as shields in the capital Khartoum, which has led to more civilian casualties. Leak wants the international community to notice what's happening in Sudan and convince the rival army generals to observe a set of rules which limit the effects of armed conflict on civilians.
This conflict is not getting international attention that it deserves. Those fighting are not adhering to international humanitarian law. The fighting has internally displaced more than 3.6 million people, while nearly 1 million have fled across the borders. A protracted conflict in Sudan could tip the entire region into a humanitarian catastrophe.
The fighting in Sudan, now in the fourth month, is continuing at a time of unusually heavy rains, which have caused floods in several areas since last month. UNICEF says at least 2 million children have been forced from their homes since fighting erupted in Sudan, an average of more than 700 children newly displaced every hour, and 20.3 million people in Sudan will be food insecure by the end of next month. For VOA Africa, I'm James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
More than 1,000 health experts, including African cabinet ministers, are in Botswana for the World Health Organization Africa region to discuss health challenges facing the continent. Delegates want the continent to be better prepared for the next pandemic following Africa's poor response to COVID-19. Kundise Dube reports from Harborone in Botswana.
Speaking at the start of the five-day meeting Monday, John Gasea, head of Africa's Center for Disease Control and Prevention, said it is important for the continent to be pandemic ready after being found wanting during COVID-19.
This next pandemic, Excellency, we need to be prepared as other continents are preparing themselves. We need also to see how Africa can become more independent by manufacturing their own vaccines. The second one is
Africa faced challenges inoculating its population due to the difficulty in buying adequate amounts of the vaccine. fewer than 10% of Africans are vaccinated. Additionally, WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says climate change is compounding Africa's health challenges.
The climate crisis is a health crisis, which is why I encourage member states to participate actively at COP28 in the United Arab Emirates, which will feature a day dedicated to health for the first time. Health systems are increasingly dealing with the consequences of climate change in terms of communicable and non-communicable diseases and the impacts of more frequent and more severe extreme weather events.
COP28 is the United Nations Climate Change Conference taking place later this year in Dubai. Botswana's President Mokgweetsi Masisi says COVID-19 exposed inequalities in tackling a pandemic, which he adds must be avoided in future.
The inequities in access to vaccines, PPEs and medicines during the COVID-19 pandemic will probably remain one of the biggest failures of the international community in the 21st century. Diseases have no borders. Pandemics are global, and therefore the risks to one country invariably affect another.
While rich countries used their financial power to purchase COVID vaccines, distribution in Africa was erratic. WHO's Regional Director for Africa, Matshidiso Moeti, says the continent emerged from the pandemic with important lessons learned.
Although we're living in a challenging global context of health, recent advancements in our member states demonstrate that the future of health in the African region is hopeful, because you are using important lessons such as from the pandemic to enhance our preparedness and response to health emergencies.
The meeting is also expected to discuss ways to transform healthcare in Africa, including developing telemedicine strategies. Kondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
The diplomatic dispute between Niger's military leadership and France heightened on Monday, with the junta saying it would cut off electricity and water supplies to the French embassy in the capital Niamey, with no food deliveries allowed, according to reports. The junta had given the French ambassador in Niger a two-day deadline to leave the country. VOA's French to Africa reporter Abdou Razak in Niamey has the latest developments.
After the expiry of the deadline which it gave to the French ambassador to leave Nigerian territory without him executing it, the military junta did not react on this Monday. The French president has declared that the diplomat based in Niamey will not leave his post on the orders of illegitimate authorities. Emmanuel Macron, who was speaking at the annual conference which brings together French ambassadors accredited around the world, also reiterated his country's support for hosted President Mohamed Bazoum, as well as the diplomatic and military actions envisaged by ECOWAS for an exit crisis in Niger, a military action for which the new Nigerian authorities are preparing. Over the weekend, the general staff of the armed forces put all the country's military units and operations on high alert. Also, popular demonstrations of supporting the junta continued in Niamey as inside the country. Meanwhile, the deposed president's party denounced maneuvers aimed at dividing it in reference to the persistent accusations of connivance between the deposed president's predecessor Mohamed Bazoum, Issoufou Mahamadou, and the junta, in particular its president, Brigadier General Abdrahman Tchani, who was 10 years during the chief of his guard.
That's VOA's French to Africa reporter Abdou Razak speaking with us from the Niger capital, Niamey. Guinea's prime minister says elections to return the country to civilian rule will be held as planned. He has appealed to the international community for help to raise funds for the exercise, but the opposition continues to doubt whether the vote will be held as scheduled. Reporter Karim Kamara has more from the capital, Conakry.
Speculations continue to grow in Guinea that junta leader Mamadi Doumbouya plans to delay the upcoming elections for a return to civilian rule, which are slated for late next year. But in an exclusive interview with VOA, Prime Minister Bernard Gomou says vote will be held as planned. He says the President of the Republic always mentions the vote in his speeches, including the agreement signed with ECOWAS and especially the turning point on which the transition is based. He says the authorities are just asking their partners to abide by the agreement to provide technical and financial assistance for the transition. The junta is demanding $600 million from the international community and its partners for the elections. But as of now, according to the Prime Minister, neither the international community nor Guinea's partners have contributed the amount. Gomou says the government has been able to mobilize $40 million for the process. He says it is a matter of sovereignty of the state, and therefore everything should be done for the process to be successful. He says for now, they are in the process of mobilizing $600 million and seeking material support. He says the government of Guinea has been able to gather $40 million to support the return to constitutional rule. He says the first point upon which the transition is based is a census of the population, for which the state has so far financed 60%. He says they just need money to hold the elections, and that as a sovereign state, Guinea-Conakry must seek financial support, or it will have to find a way to do so without international support. But the opposition remains highly skeptical as whether the junta will abide by its promises. They accuse the junta of buying time to delay the process. For VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara, reporting from Conakry.
A judge in Monrovia, Liberia, has rejected the government's request to change the venue in the alleged murder case against former Chief Justice Gloria Mususcat. Dennis Nepson reports.
On Friday, government lawyers filed a change of venue motion, citing sensational media reporting about the case, which the government said might mislead prospective jurors to render an impartial verdict. Counsel Scott's defense team argued that the government's motion filed was intended to delay the trial, waste resources, and keep the defendants and three others in jail for no reason. Judge Roosevelt Whaley of Criminal Court 8 in his ruling said there was no sufficient evidence to support the government's request for change of venue. Former Chief Justice Scott and three others were accused of murdering niece Charlotte Musu at their home in February of this year. The late Charlotte died from multiple stabbing wounds following an attack on the home of the former Chief Justice. The defendants were arrested, charged, and indicted by the grand jury of Montserrat County on the crimes of murder, criminal conspiracy, and false alarm to law officials. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsey in Monrovia, Liberia.
And that's it for this Tuesday, August 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have an amazing Tuesday.
Bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices, our voices. Right here on VOA, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.